Wishing you a very great day.
This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov gave Ukraine an ultimatum Monday to fulfill Moscow's proposals, including surrendering territory Russia controls or its army would decide the issue. This comes a day after President Vladimir Putin said he was open to talks. Also on Monday, a drone believed to be Ukrainian penetrated hundreds of kilometers through Russian airspace, causing a deadly explosion at the main base for Moscow's strategic bombers in the latest attack to expose gaps in its air defenses. Moscow said it had shot down the drone, causing it to crash at the Ingalls Air Base, where three service members were killed. A strange twist to reports that former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence had filed a statement of candidacy to run for U.S. president in 2024. Pence's advisor, Devin O'Malley, says that Pence has not filed to run for president. Sky News reported Monday that the filings were on the Federal Election Commission website. A spokesperson for the FEC said they do not comment on specific filings, but noted the commission reviews potentially false and fictitious registration forms and reports. A new survey finds that from Maine to California, Republicans faced unexpected setbacks with the small but crucial slice of voters who don't identify with either major party. According to AP VoteCast, a sweeping national survey of the electorate, Republican House candidates nationwide won support of 38% of independent voters in last month's midterm elections. That's far short of the 51% that Democrats scored with the same group in 2018 when they swept into power by picking up 41 seats. This is VOA News. Serbia on Monday placed its security troops on the border with Kosovo on the full state of combat readiness, ignoring NATO's calls for calming down of tensions between the two wartime Balkan foes. Serbia's interior minister said he ordered the full combat readiness of police and other security units and that they be placed under the command of the Army Chief of Staff according to their operational plan. It was not immediately clear what this order meant on the ground. Earlier Monday, NATO-led peacekeepers in Kosovo said they were investigating a shooting incident in a tense northern region, urging calm as Serbia's top military officials inspected their troops on the border with Kosovo in a show of combat readiness. A second group in 2 days of weak and exhausted Rohingya Muslims landed on a beach in Indonesia's northernmost province on Monday after weeks at sea, officials said. At least 185 men, women, and children disembarked from a rickety wooden boat at dusk on a beach in a coastal village, according to local police. They were taken to the village hall and will stay there while they receive help. The snowfall in western New York State has closed the airport in Buffalo as travelers around the country struggle to reach their destinations. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
More snow is falling in Erie County, New York, already socked with a pair of winter storms.
It is still a dangerous situation to be out.
Governor Kathy Hochul on state road closures. While we're learning from the Buffalo airport that it is closed until Tuesday at 11 a.m. in San Diego.
Cancel flight 347 back from Oakland.
As heard on KFMB-TV, hundreds of flights were delayed or canceled, and luggage just piled up at the baggage carousels as would-be travelers tried to rebook their flights. FlightAware.com says more than 2,000 U.S. flights have been canceled on this busy travel day after Christmas. I'm Jackie Quinn.
North Korea's ruling party has kicked off a major annual meeting with economic policy on the agenda, state media reported Tuesday. Instead of a New Year's Day speech, leader Kim Jong-un in recent years has used the year-end plenary meeting of the Workers' Party of Korea as a platform to outline policies in key areas such as diplomacy, security, and the economy. This year's meeting began on Monday with Kim at the helm, the official Korean Central News Agency KCNA reported, capping a year that saw Pyongyang conduct a record-breaking wave of weapons tests that sparked concern and warnings. Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, December 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedwofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, South Korea fires at intruding North Korean drones as tensions rise on the peninsula.
South Korea's military fired about 100 shots. It says it failed to bring down any of the drones. South Korean officials say one of the drones returned to North Korea.
Suspected Ukraine drone penetrates Russian airspace, causing explosions at key airbase.
The culprit for the deadly blast at the main base for Moscow's long-range bombers was a drone, believed to be Ukrainian. Moscow says three service members died when it shot the drone down.
And international aid agencies suspend operations in Afghanistan as the Taliban bans female employees from working. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. North Korea flew at least five small drones into South Korean airspace Monday. That is according to South Korea's military, which responded by sending its own drone into North Korea. It's the latest attempt by Pyongyang to raise tensions, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from South Korea.
South Korea scrambled fighter jets and helicopters in response to the North Korean drone incursion, which began about 10:25 a.m. local time. Though South Korea's military fired about 100 shots, it says it failed to bring down any of the drones. South Korean officials say one of the drones returned to North Korea, but they lost track of the others. South Korean military official Lee Sung-oh said Seoul responded by sending its own unmanned aircraft on a reconnaissance mission into North Korea. He vowed thorough and firm responses to future North Korean provocations. It's not clear if the North Korean drones were armed, but officials say they were small, only about 2 meters wide. North Korea has sent tiny, crudely built drones into South Korea for apparent surveillance missions at least four other times. This is the first reported incursion in more than 5 years. It's likely to raise questions about South Korea's ability to keep out North Korean drones. One of the South Korean aircraft involved in the response crashed east of Seoul, though officials haven't explained why. Neither pilot in the plane was injured, officials said. North Korea has not commented on the incursion, but in the past has denied sending spy drones into South Korea. North Korea has steadily ramped up tensions this year, launching a record-high number of missiles and conducting artillery shelling in sensitive border areas. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
A drone believed to be Ukrainian penetrated hundreds of miles through Russian airspace, causing a deadly explosion at the main base for Moscow's strategic bombers in the latest attack to expose gaps in its air defenses. Angela Johnston of Reuters reports.
Surveillance video captured this explosion on Monday in Russia, hundreds of miles from the Ukrainian frontier. The culprit for the deadly blast at the main base for Moscow's long-range bombers was a drone, believed to be Ukrainian. Moscow says three service members died when it shot the drone down. Some accounts said planes were damaged, although Russia said they weren't. Reuters cannot verify the reports either way, and Ukraine did not comment. The incident could be the latest attack to expose gaps in Russia's air defenses. The same base was struck just 3 weeks earlier by a suspected drone. Kyiv says the base is home to bombers that have targeted Ukraine's civilian infrastructure. Also on Monday, Russian President Vladimir Putin met with leaders of former Soviet states, but did not make any direct references to the war in televised remarks. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said the situation at the front in the Donbas region, including in Bakhmut, was difficult and painful and would require all of the country's strength and concentration. As the war enters its 11th month, Putin has said he's open to negotiations over Ukraine, but has shown no sign of retreating from his demand that Kyiv recognize Moscow's armed conquest of a fifth of the country. For its part, Kyiv says it will fight until Russia withdraws. Tens of thousands of Ukrainian civilians have died in cities Russia razed to the ground, and thousands of troops on both sides have been killed. Since October, Russia has been deliberately targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure with drones and missiles. Moscow says the aim is to degrade Kyiv's ability to fight. Ukraine says the attacks have no military purpose and are intended to harm civilians as winter sets in, calling it a war crime.
That's Angela Johnston of Reuters. Four international aid agencies, including Save the Children, said they were suspending their humanitarian programs in Afghanistan in response to the Taliban-run administration's order to stop female employees from working. The administration ordered all local and foreign non-government organizations not to let female staff work until further notice. It said the move, which was globally condemned, was justified because some women had not adhered to the Taliban's interpretation of Islamic dress code for women. Chief Operating Officer for Save the Children International, David Wright, told Reuters female staff were crucial in getting aid and services to women and children.
The Taliban have decreed that women are not allowed to work for international non-governmental organizations and national non-governmental organizations. As we have got 5,000 staff and community, including community volunteers in Afghanistan. Almost half of those are women. So essentially, if we were to keep working, we'd have to turn up for work tomorrow with half our workforce missing. But to have access to women and children, you need to have female health staff. And so if you don't have female health staff, you won't have access to those people. So essentially, it's just not possible for us to do our job if we our female colleagues are not able to get out there. In Afghan culture, it's frowned upon for a man who's not a relative of a woman to be kind of interacting with her closely. So if that, that means you need to have female nurses, ideally female doctors to deal with women and their children. Although otherwise, yeah, it's very difficult to do with a male doctor. It is a grave situation, and particularly when it comes to the stabilization centres. Of course, as I say, we're in the middle of winter. There's cases of pneumonia that need treating. So ultimately, if this is not resolved within a week or so, children are going to start dying as a result of this decision. At the moment, the sector as a whole is negotiating with the Taliban to see what can be done, and that's led by the United Nations. So they're in the lead and meeting with the various authorities to see if this problem can be resolved. You know, it's only affecting non-governmental organization staff. It's not affecting private sector companies. It's not affecting the United Nations. So essentially, we're just asking the Taliban to rescind this decision because ultimately, if they don't, the consequences, and there are severe consequences, will be borne by the mothers and children of Afghanistan.
That's Chief Operating Officer at Save the Children International, David Wright. Frontline health workers in China say hospitals are struggling with an upsurge in COVID cases, and there are fears that patients may have to be turned away due to the lack of beds and resources. Julian Scatterwaite of Reuters reports.
Hospitals in China are under siege from a new wave of COVID cases. One in Shanghai said it expected half of the city's 25 million people to get infected by the end of the week after Christmas. In Beijing, healthcare workers said patients might have to be turned away due to a lack of beds and resources. Howard Bernstein is a doctor at the city's United Family Hospital.
The hospital is just overwhelmed from top to bottom. So, you know, the ER filled up with people. A lot of them got admitted to the hospital. They're not getting better in a day or two, so there's no flow. And therefore, people keep coming to the ER, but they can't go upstairs into hospital rooms, so they're stuck in the ER.
The new upsurge comes after President Xi Jinping's government suddenly abandoned strict measures aimed at stamping out the virus. State media say frontline workers have been told to work while sick, while retired staff have been brought back in some areas. The country's National Health Commission has said it will stop publishing daily data on infections amid doubts over their reliability. But figures from one UK-based health data firm estimate China is facing more than a million infections and 5,000 deaths every day. Ordinary citizens are making their own estimates too.
That's Julian Satterwaite of Reuters. During the past 15 years, China funded the construction of massive infrastructure projects in Sri Lanka. But after the country's economy collapsed this year, there were questions whether these projects built as part of China's Belt and Road Initiative contributed to the crisis in the small Indian Ocean island country. Anjana Pasricha has this report.
Chinese-funded port city in Colombo was supposed to become an international business hub, but it is virtually deserted. Built as part of China's Belt and Road Initiative, projects like these were meant to boost Sri Lanka's economy. Now, as the country grapples with its worst economic crisis ever, they are seen as white elephant projects, adding to its debt. The Chinese projects came under scrutiny as Sri Lanka ran out of foreign exchange to import food, fuel, and medicines earlier this year. The catastrophic downturn has pushed many into poverty. Living standards have plummeted. Millions need food assistance. The crisis is blamed on economic mismanagement and the COVID-19 pandemic. But analysts say the billions of dollars spent on the Chinese-funded projects deepened Sri Lanka's woes. Estimates are that the share of Chinese loans in Sri Lanka's $40 billion debt range from 10 to 20%. Sri Lanka's debt to China could make it harder to push back against Beijing. In August, Sri Lankan authorities allowed a Chinese ship to dock at Hambantota, a port built with Chinese loans, despite objections by India and the United States. China said it was a scientific research ship, but some analysts said it was a surveillance vessel. The incident reinforced worries that the Chinese projects are linked to its strategic ambitions in the Indian Ocean. The Hambantota port was leased to China after Sri Lanka could not pay back the loans. China strongly rejects such criticism. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian said last month that Beijing has never sought any political interests from its investments in Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka now hopes to hold early talks with China on restructuring its debt, which are crucial to securing a bailout from the International Monetary Fund and starting an economic revival. Anjana Pusricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
In other news, a court in Cambodia has convicted 35 activists and former opposition lawmakers of conspiracy to commit treason. The human rights group Likado says the 36, including former opposition leader Sam Rainsy and several leaders of his disbanded Cambodian National Rescue Party, were accused of trying to help exiled former lawmakers return home in January 2021 in defiance of a government ban. It says the sentences handed down by the Phnom Penh Municipal Court range from 5 to 7 years in prison, with three defendants receiving suspended sentences. It says the court ruling was the fourth verdict in five mass trials that have been initiated since November 2020 against a total of 158 leaders and supporters of the former opposition party. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Ethiopian officials have, for the first time in nearly 2 years, arrived in Tigray's capital, Mekele, to join in overseeing implementation of a November peace deal. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi.
The Speaker of Ethiopia's Parliament, Tigray Safodulo, arrived in Tigray's capital, Mekele, on Monday as leader of the first federal delegation to the region since war broke out in November 2020. The delegation, which state media says includes members of Ethiopia's National Dialogue Commission, are in Tigray to work on implementing an African Union-brokered peace deal to end the deadly two-year conflict. The November deal signed in South Africa saw Ethiopia and the Tigray People's Liberation Front agree to cease fighting and for foreign fighters to leave, for the TPLF to disarm, and for blocked aid and services to be restored. The visit will be seen as a sign that the peace deal is holding, despite TPLF allegations and reports of continued killings, looting and rape by Amhara region militias and Eritrean forces. Eritrea and the regional militias were not party to the peace deal. Eritrea and Ethiopia have denied Asmara's involvement in Tigray, though last year Eritrea acknowledged its troops' presence and said they will be withdrawn. Mediators from Kenya and the African Union are also expected to visit Mekele this week after Ethiopia and the TPLF agreed Thursday to a joint monitoring team. Ethiopia has gradually lifted a blockade on desperately needed food and medical aid to Tigray and restored some telecommunications. The two-year conflict is estimated to have killed hundreds of thousands of people and displaced millions. but information is hard to verify in Tigray, and Ethiopia has also blocked journalists from entering the region. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Mohamed. And critics of Zambia's law against insulting the president have welcomed the government's repeal of the controversial measure as a step forward for democracy. Rights groups said the colonial-era law had been used to silence government critics. President Hakainde Hichilema announced the repeal over the weekend, along with the abolition of the death penalty. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
Daniel Sinjwala Libati, a human rights lawyer, told VOA that he is happy with the repeal of the defamation law announced late Friday by President Hichilema.
Very good. Very good. It allows people to freely criticize, not insult, freely criticize the presidency and provide checks and balances and constructive criticism in line with the right to freedom of expression under our Bill of Rights.
Political analyst Guess Nurenda says while he's happy with the enactment of the law, a lot still needs to be done to promote freedom of expression in Zambia.
Would like to urge President Hakainde Hichilema to set the tone and continue doing good, especially in attending to the draconian undercake laws.
Opposition National Democratic Party leader Saboi Imboela has been arrested multiple times under the defamation law. She told VOA that while she welcomes the repeal of the colonial-era law, she urges Zambians to exercise caution. She notes that the existence of cyber security laws is a concern as they will restrict freedom of expression.
I see a situation whereby they're going to use any laws whatsoever to ensure that they get to their political opponents. So the people in Zambia should not even feel comfortable. They should be careful now, actually more than ever before, about what they say on Facebook, because the president and his people are going to use the cyber laws to come after you for whatever it is that you're going to say.
In a statement late Friday, Hichilema also announced the repeal of the death penalty. Zambia's last execution took place in 1997, but some 250 people were still on death row as of 2021, including 9 people newly sentenced. Mwelwa Mulea is the spokesperson for the Zambia Human Rights Commission, which oversees human rights issues in the country. He told VOA the repeal of the laws will improve Zambia's human rights record following increased arrest of political opponents.
The signing of that bill into law is a landmark development towards enhancing the fundamental right to life and also the right to freedom of expression, and must be commended by everyone.
Earlier in 2022, Amnesty International Secretary General Agnes Kalamad met with Hichilema in Zambia, urging his government to repeal the defamation law, which had been used to silence critics since its enactment in 1965. During his election campaign last year, Hichilema promised to uphold human rights and freedom of expression. In the past year alone, at least 12 critics and opponents of Hichilema were arrested for insulting the president, some multiple times. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the website VolcanoDiscovery.com, the Big Island of Hawaii has experienced slightly over 8,400 earthquakes so far in 2022. Most, however, were classified as fairly minor M2+ quakes. Geoscientists at Caltech say they found that magma surging through extensive interconnected webs of tunnels beneath the island's volcanoes caused a series of mini earthquakes over the last 7 years. The scientists explain that these networks of passageways are used to recharge the magma chambers of at least Mauna Loa and Kilauea, which are two of the island's most active volcanoes. To reach their findings, the scientists ran data gathered by seismic stations on the Big Island through a machine learning algorithm. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chin Adolfo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Finland and Sweden are ready to become formal members of the NATO alliance, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken after meeting with the foreign ministers of the two Nordic countries in Washington. Both nations, after long histories of military non-alliance, officially applied to join NATO in May, following the Kremlin's unprovoked further invasion of Ukraine. At a press briefing, Secretary Blinken said, "Finland and Sweden fully understand what's at stake for Ukraine, for NATO, for the entire world at this critical moment."
This year, Sweden and Finland have sent well over $1 billion in security, humanitarian, and other assistance to Ukraine. Both recently announced their largest ever packages of military aid. Swedes and Finns have welcomed tens of thousands of displaced Ukrainians into their communities. As EU members, they're joining our partners to level unprecedented sanctions against Russia to curtail its ability to wage this war.
Secretary Blinken noted that Swedish and Finnish troops have served with U.S. and NATO forces in Kosovo, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya, and that their militaries work nearly seamlessly with alliance forces. He emphasized the two countries will not only bolster the NATO alliance through their military capabilities, but also through their values.
An abiding commitment to democracy, the rules-based international order, respect for human rights, respect for human dignity.
28 out of 30 NATO allies have approved the accession of the two countries to the alliance through a process that has proceeded swiftly. Turkey and Hungary have yet to do so. As Secretary Blinken pointed out, Sweden and Finland have taken significant concrete steps to address Turkey's security concerns.
It's moving forward because of the very important work that both of our soon-to-be allies have done with Turkey, and I have every expectation that process will continue and be brought to a successful conclusion soon.
Secretary Blinken said the Kremlin's brutal war on Ukraine has resulted in a series of failures for Russia, including failure to defeat Ukraine on the battlefield and to erase Ukraine's borders, identity, people, and resilience. And as Sweden and Finland prepare to join NATO, Secretary Blinken said, he's failed at weakening our alliance. Indeed, he's only made NATO stronger.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.